Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, January 24th, 2020. Our guest on the show is Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, who joins me every Friday with news and insights on publishing and reading. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So, Andrew, you cover news coming from the library world for Publishers Weekly, and we will lead today on Beyond the Book with your reporting on a bill proposed in the Missouri state legislature that would jail librarians for allowing minors to access content that a committee of parents deems inappropriate.
Yes. So free speech and library advocates last week really sounded the alarm over a bill proposed in Missouri that would seek to establish what they call parental library review boards. It sounds like something out of a Bradbury novel, right? You know, this as a condition of state library funding. They were going to tuck this new language into a law that allocated funds to state funds to local libraries. Now, these boards under the new law would have the power to decide which age-appropriate materials would be accessible to minors within the library. And as you say, what happens to librarians who refuse to comply with the board's decisions? Well, according to the text of the bill, they would be subject to a fine and up to a year in prison. Specifically, among its provisions, it's called House Bill 2044. It's the Parental Oversight of Public Libraries Act. It was introduced by Representative Ben Baker. It would establish five-member boards, and these board members would be elected by a simple majority vote at local town meetings. Wherever there's a library or in a township, they would be able to elect their own boards. And these boards would be empowered to determine what materials are appropriate for minors in the library. And notably, too, and I find this very telling and, of course, deeply unconstitutional, public librarians, if you are a public librarian, you're explicitly barred from running for or getting elected to or serving on these review boards. The bill says that straight out. Even if you live in the community and are a parent in the community, if you're a librarian, no go for these boards.
So let's see, the Parental Oversight of Public Libraries Act. I'm working out the bill's acronym in my head here in real time. And wait, no, not that.
It is. Yes. Oh, yes. It's POOPLA. Yeah. So this dude in Missouri actually named his bill POOPLA, which is quite fitting in addition to being hilarious because the bill really is. All right. I'm just going to drop that metaphor right there. But yes, we're talking about POOPLA here.
We are indeed. And Andrew, you're not alone in thinking so about the bill. A number of organizations, including the ALA, the American Library Association, and PEN America, have come out firing against this bill.
Yes. In a statement, James Tager, who's the Deputy Director for Free Expression Research and Policy at the PEN America Foundation, called this bill a shockingly transparent attempt to legalize book banning in the state of Missouri. And of course, a lot of people agree with them. And I'll quote his release here. Let me pull this up. Every reader and writer in the country should be horrified, absolutely horrified at the bill, he said, adding that librarians could actually be in prison under this act for following his or her conscience and refusing to block minors from accessing a book. You know, and that tells you everything you really need to know, this is Tager, about the suitability of this act within a democratic society. Now, the bill's author, the aforementioned Representative Ben Baker, he's been playing the, you know, the what's the big deal card here. And, you know, he just wants people to know that, you know, he's not telling libraries they can't buy this stuff. He's just saying they can't make it available to certain people. And I'll quote him here in a report. He says the main thing he wants is to be able to take his kids to a library and make sure they're in a safe environment, that they're not going to be exposed to something that is objectionable material. Unfortunately, he says some librarians make that a problem. And again, he said he's not objecting to libraries actually buying this objectionable material. He just wants librarians to stop, you know, people from wandering around the library and actually seeing it or finding it. You know, but you don't need a committee of parents, Mr. Baker, to make sure kids don't see objectionable materials. You just need parents, right? You know, why should any parent's objections govern what another parent's kids get to see? If I want to keep my kids from seeing something, well, that's on me. And, you know, it's not on the librarian who now faces jail time for failing to enforce someone else's moral code. And I think Tager said it best in his missive when he closed that, you know, this act is clearly aimed at empowering small groups of parents to appoint themselves as censors over their state's public libraries. Among the tons of coverage that this got last week, the website Book Riot, Kelly Jensen also made a great observation here that the board members overseeing what libraries are going to be able to make available to minors are not going to be selected based on merit, right? They're not going to be based on experience or the familiarity with the material, but rather on the ability to show up to a meeting and get majority support, which means that small groups of vocal opponents are going to be in a position to make really critical decision about what library materials young people get to access. And, you know, in a word, it's un-American. Right. The outcry of the various groups to this bill makes that point, though. You know, I should point out that one voice here has been noticeably missing, and I've been waiting for it. And that's the Association of American Publishers, because free speech is one of the pillars of the AAP, supposedly. And this is the kind of thing in the past that the AAP would have been quick to jump on. They would have been the first to jump on. But I think the writing has been on the wall for some time now that the current iteration of AAP is sort of backing off its free speech portfolio, shall we say, unless it's a major publisher that wants to sell a book that the Trump administration wants to ban. But I'm hopeful that we'll see the AAP weigh in and weigh in strongly soon, because this kind of law is a direct threat to publishers and readers everywhere.
Now, the idea of librarians getting sent to jail ought to add a little more buzz to the ALA midwinter meeting, which kicks off this afternoon in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it might even help John Sargent get off the hook a little bit. You know, seriously, I do expect this to be a pretty serious topic of discussion and mentioned at a number of sessions and probably taken up at a workshop or two. And of course, when I refer to John Sargent, I'm pointing that the big deal here in Philadelphia still, I believe, is going to be the Macmillan CEO's much anticipated Ask Me Anything session, which is set for early tomorrow morning. As you said, the show starts in earnest later this afternoon, so we'll have a lot more to say. But yes, this law in Missouri is going to be certainly something that's going to be talked about. And ebooks are probably going to be a big star of the show. So look forward to that reporting next week.
All right. So this week, though, you've been waiting on details of the settlement to a closely watched copyright lawsuit organized by the AAP against Audible over its captions program. Anything new to share beyond what we talked about last week?
You know, as of this recording, I know we have nothing new to share, which I think is pretty odd. You know, we have yet to see the details of the settlement, and I caution that we may not see all of the details of the settlement. We may just see statements from either side. We may see a joint statement from the side. So I'm not really sure how this is going to go, because this is a private settlement after all. Now, we did get some sense of how the judge in the case, Valerie Caproni, sees things. She dismissed the suit with prejudice immediately upon being notified by the parties that they'd reached a settlement. The parties, in their note to Judge Caproni on the 13th of January, said that we've reached this agreement, but we need another week or two, at least a little more time, they said. I think January 21st was the deadline they gave, to send over the signed documents. Well, Caproni didn't wait. She basically dismissed the case right away. So the case is now over. Now, which side is going to come out and declare victory, or who knows what they're going to do next? I don't know. But we do expect to hear something soon, possibly even later today. So check back with us later.
And finally, Andrew, news from another show, the ABA's Winter Institute in Baltimore. In Monday's issue, you'll have a full recap, but the reports in PW direct from the show floor include coverage of a panel on antitrust action in the bookselling space.
That's right. We have a number of PW reporters in Baltimore. I'm just down the road in Philadelphia, up the road, I should say. And earlier this week, you know, I'll mention a few things that have been going on there. The ABA's Winter Institute kicked off with a panel of speakers who were addressing the perils of Amazon and their dominance in online retailing and what might be done to level the playing field in terms of antitrust for booksellers. Now, not a new subject, right? This has been part of past ABAs, past Winter Institutes, something we've been seeing in the news quite a bit. Amazon and antitrust have been a pretty big story for the better part of a decade, and certainly in 2019, the subject came up quite a bit. And I have to say, like, there wasn't a lot more to add to the story at Winter Institute this year, except for the fact that, yeah, Amazon keeps getting bigger. It keeps branching out. And I'd point out to people that, you know, there is a competition committee on digital markets, an investigation that is now underway in the House, I believe part of the Judiciary Committee. And the AAP filed comments last year on Amazon's dominance. The ALA filed comments on Amazon, not only on Amazon, but on the fact that there's a cartel of five publishers who now control 90% of the bestseller list, too. But as Matt Stoller, author of Goliath, the 100-year war between monopoly power and democracy, told attendees at Winter Institute, you know, the government isn't going to solve this problem anytime soon. He offered a more historical take on how the United States has handled these monopolistic practices in the past, cited a lot of examples of how government broke up powerful corporations like the railroads to AT&T, and it took some time. It's possible to initiate change, Stoller said. The change, the cycle has already started, he said, but it's going to just take some time. It's going to take more than this. You know, antitrust is one of the more popular topics now, more popular than it has been in the last 25, 30 years, but it's going to require patience and it's probably going to require a plan as well. So more on all of this at Monday's issue of PW, more on the Winter Institute of PW, which also included a really interesting talk with American Dirt author Janine Cummings, who spoke at the event. And also we'll get a general sense of how ABA is approaching the future with the new director stepping in. So lots of good stuff coming out of Baltimore. Some of it's up now on the PW website and more to come in Monday's issue. So check it out.
Thanks for the reporting and the analysis, Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer. And we will talk with you again next Friday.
My pleasure, as always.
Up next on Beyond the Book, in today's saturated media market, a familiar character or title on a shelf or in a thumbnail is a proven strategy for publishers to get the sale, says Kristen McLean with NPD Books, the team behind NPD BookScan. Licensed and branded titles include properties that started as books and went elsewhere, as well as books based on properties from outside the book world, such as Lego, Minecraft, and Disney's Frozen movie franchise.
There's two different kinds of licensing. There's something like Harry Potter, which obviously started in books, but now has an incredibly rich and very profitable story world outside of the books. And it also includes things that are out there in the world of entertainment that come in. So an example of that would be The Witcher right now, which is on the adult side of licensing, is performing very well in the books category. This is actually... is now a show that's streaming on Netflix. That show was based on a game, video game, which was based on a book. And now we've come full circle. The books that were the genesis of both the video game and now the series are selling really well again. So, you know, it's a virtuous circle, and it's very hard to pull apart and just talk about one single category in that cycle.
Licensed books grab the spotlight. Next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.